Radio Prague News. The leaders of the proposed centre-right coalition government have agreed on a programme and the distribution of ministerial posts. Civic Democrat Member of Parliament Miloš Batera has suffered a stroke and is in hospital. And two people have been injured and several cars demolished in a scaffolding accident in the centre of Brno. The leaders of a proposed centre-right government of the Civic Democrats, the Christian Democrats and the Greens have agreed on a coalition programme and the distribution of ministerial posts. The right-of-centre Civic Democrats, which won most votes in the general election earlier this month, will hold 10 seats in the cabinet, including the premiership. The two other parties will hold 3 seats each. Civic Democrat leader Mirek Topolánek is slated to be the next prime minister. The head of the Greens, Martin Bursík, could be the country's next environment minister and the Christian Democrats Miroslav Kalousek, agriculture minister. The coalition is proposing a new post, Minister Without Portfolio for European Affairs, and the abolition of the Ministry for Information Technology and the Ministry for Regional Development. The coalition agreement is to be signed on Monday. Mr. Topolánek said that a confidence vote on the new government, which lacks a majority in the 200-member lower house, could take place in about 4 weeks' time. Meanwhile, the emerging three-party coalition came close to a crisis after one of its MPs, Civic Democrat Miloš Batera, suffered a stroke and had to be rushed to hospital on Friday. The coalition is already one vote short of a majority in parliament and faces crucial voting on Thursday when a new Speaker of Parliament is to be elected. Election of the Speaker is a precondition for the old government to step aside to make way for the new. No further details on the state of health of Miloš Batera have been revealed. But according to Civic Democrat Vlastimil Tlustý, Mr. Batera is well enough to take part in next week's vote. Parliament is to begin meeting on Tuesday. Two people were injured and some 15 cars demolished when three floors of scaffolding collapsed at a building site in the Moravian city of Brno. The accident happened during restoration work at a building next to the luxurious Hotel Grand in the city centre. The two people were recovered from the scene and taken to hospital. A 50-year-old man had light injuries, but a 21-year-old woman suffered multiple fractures. An investigation into the accident has been launched. And a quick look at the weather. The weekend is expected to see sunny weather with temperatures reaching highs of up to 30 degrees Celsius. But meteorologists warn of rain and thunderstorms around the country on Sunday night and throughout the first half of the week. I'm Lita Asiru, and that's the end of the news. Thanks for tuning in to Radio Prague. Coming up next, our weekly magazine, Inside Central Europe. Don't forget that on some of our times and frequencies over the weekend, you can also hear our regular Saturday program. For details of precise times and frequencies, send for a brochure at Radio Prague, English section 1099 Prague 2, the Czech Republic, or visit our website at www.radio.cz/English.
Hello and welcome to Insight Central Europe, a co-production of five broadcasters in Slovakia, Hungary, the Czech Republic, Poland and Slovenia. I'm Kerry Skyring, and this week, George Bush says the fight for freedom in Hungary can inspire Iraqis. Slovakia's election winners search for some coalition partners, and we'll be sampling a summer festival in Slovenia. These stories and more in this Insight Central Europe. But first, here's Dita Asiedu with the news.
Thank you, Kerry. Hungary has been marking the 50th anniversary of the crushing of the 1956 uprising by Soviet troops, which left thousands of Hungarians dead. Commemorations in Budapest were attended by the U.S. President George Bush, who compared the attempt by Hungarians to end Stalinist rule in the 1950s to Iraq's struggle to develop into a democracy. He pointed to the patience of Hungarians who had to wait decades for political freedom, saying that liberty could be delayed but not denied. The European Commission has evaluated Poland as the least prepared of all the new EU members for the introduction of the euro. A report states that Poland has not yet set a date for entering the eurozone, and experts are not even aware who will be supervising the process of transition to the common currency. Poland has not defined the period of accepted parallel use of the euro and zloty, nor presented designs for the reverse side of the Polish version of the European coins. Three Czech centre and right-of-centre parties have reached a deal to form a coalition government 3 weeks after the country's general election. Mirek Topolánek, whose right-wing Civic Democrats won the most votes, said his party would hold the majority of cabinet posts, including the premiership, while the rest would be divided between the Christian Democrats and centrist Greens. The coalition holds exactly half the seats in the lower house of parliament, and the deal will need the support of at least one Social Democrat or Communist deputy to be approved. And finally, Slovenia's foreign ministry has published a white paper outlining the country's point of view on its maritime border dispute with Croatia. Foreign Minister Dimitri Rupel said that the aim was not to accuse or attack Croatia, but to work for dialogue. The Croatian Prime Minister Ivo Sanader said that his government would study the document carefully and respond with its own report.
Thanks, Dieter. U.S. President George W. Bush was in Budapest this week, where he took part in ceremonies marking 50 years since the uprising against Soviet control. Speaking on the Gellert Hill overlooking the Danube River and the Grand Parliament building, Mr. Bush took the 1956 revolution as a metaphor for other struggles to throw off oppression.
Hungary sits at the heart of Europe. Hungary represents the triumph of liberty over tyranny, and America is proud to call Hungary a friend. I appreciate the opportunity to stand here on Gellert Hill, which offers a striking view of your beautiful city. 50 years ago, you could watch history being written from this hill.
The U.S. president on themes that have dominated his second term in office, freedom and democracy. The Budapest stopover was tacked on to a visit to Vienna for the EU-U.S. summit on Wednesday. I asked Sebastian Gorka from the Budapest-based Centre for Euro-Atlantic Integration and Democracy, why did Mr. Bush choose Budapest?
The reason that he's accepted the invitation, which was lobbied very aggressively by both sides of the political scene in Hungary, is that this October will see the 50th anniversary of the Hungarian uprising against communism. So if we take the war against terrorism as being in part a statement against fundamentalist dictatorial ideologies, then I think, you know, it is a very wise decision for Washington to echo this pro-democracy spirit of our revolution in 1956 by coming to Hungary on this very important anniversary.
Well, George Bush was in Vienna for the EU-US summit before travelling to Budapest, and 15,000 people demonstrated against him and his war in Iraq. In Budapest, there were small demonstrations. Why does he get a warmer welcome in Hungary?
Complicated. I mean, I'm sure you understand that, you know, to understand Central Europe, you have to understand the paradoxes and all kinds of contrasts, and it's a very complicated part of the world. Hungarians, you know, on the surface are very polite individuals, but the paradox is in Hungary, the people who have the biggest problem with George Bush are actually the conservatives. It's the people who defined themselves around 1956, the people whose parents or grandparents were on the side of the barricade fighting the communists. Because there is a psychological scar for many of those people in the fact that Hungary stood up to communism on the encouragement of things like Radio Free Europe and then was left in the lurch. So, you know, 56 is going to be very interesting. How the speechwriters have included it, I think, will be a delicate question because, yes, it was about democracy. Yes, U.S. foreign policy is about exporting democracy now in 2006. But 1956, to many people, did leave a bad taste in the mouth.
Sebastian Gorka from the Budapest-based Centre for Euro-Atlantic Integration and Democracy. Slovakia's general election last weekend gave victory to the left-leaning Social Democrats, the party known as Smer. But it will be some time before a government is formed, as Smer will need coalition partners to achieve a majority in the parliament. From Radio Slovakia International, Katarina Richterova has more.
No loud cheering or hasty comments to the media, but rather cautious celebrations behind closed doors. That is how Smer Social Democracy marked their victory in the general election that took place last weekend. Gaining nearly 30% of the votes, Smer has 50 seats in the new parliament. To be able to form a new government, the party needs over half of the parliamentary seats. And so right after receiving a mandate from the president to form a new cabinet, Smer began a week of meetings and negotiations with fellow parties that made it to the parliament.
V prvom kole oficiálnych stretnutí pôjde len o programové prieniky. Predložíme všetkým politickým stranám, s ktorými...
In the first round of official meetings, we are only looking for program overlaps. We will present all parties our priorities, on which we want to base the new government program. We will then narrow down the series of meetings according to the reactions to this as well as to their own priorities.
Said Smer leader Robert Fico. Fico started talks with two of the other parties currently in opposition, the Movement for Democratic Slovakia, that saw a significant fall in their vote share, and the Nationalists, SNS party, whose result came as even a bigger surprise. After 4 years of not even being represented in parliament, they gained more than 11% of the vote.
We will honor the choice Smer makes in picking a third partner for our coalition. If Smer decided not to continue negotiations with us, we will respect and honor it too.
Said leader of the Movement for Democratic Slovakia, former Prime Minister Vladimir Mečiar. Such accommodating statements right now are not a big surprise, say political analysts. Many of them have commented on how calm the political climate has suddenly become after a conflict-ridden election campaign. Although before the election, none of the parties wanted to say outright who they would be willing to join in a future coalition. Personality clashes between Smer leader Robert Fico and the long-term leader of the Movement for Democratic Slovakia, Vladimir Mečiar, were well known.
Dnes nevidíme prekážku, povedali sme si naše priority.
We started to talk about our programs and found no obstacles. That is a very significant piece of information.
Stated Smer leader Robert Fico. Now it seems Smer, the Movement for Democratic Slovakia and the Nationalists have no major clashes in their programs and could form a new government. After these first round meetings, Smer then met the parties of the current coalition that made it to parliament. The ethnic Hungarian coalition that gained a little over 11% has already stated its priorities, but believes it would be possible to reach a compromise with Smer. Smer and SDKU, the party of Prime Minister Miklas Zurinda that came second in the election and won more than 18% of the vote, seem to be most improbable match, as the SDKU stands firmly behind the liberal reforms it has launched, while Smer has a plan to reverse many of them.
Chceme sa stretnúť a vypočuť si názory strany Smer, ako si predstavuje usporiadať...
We would like to meet Smer representatives and listen to their priorities and opinions on future relations between other political parties.
Said leader of the Christian Democrats, Pavel Hrušovský. For now, it seems that the Christian Democrats, which came out of the election with almost 9%, will tip the balance. It is not possible to predict the direction of Slovakia's economic policy just on the basis of the election results, as further talks will be very complex, but some analysts have raised concerns about the possible halting of euro adoption or changes in the business environment in Slovakia as the country moves to the left. For Inside Central Europe, this is Katarina Richterová reporting from Bratislava.
For two consecutive years, there's been a ban on a gay pride march in the Polish capital, Warsaw. But this year's event, called the Equality Parade, was finally allowed to go ahead. It attracted German and Swedish politicians who'd supported the initiative. But the event remains controversial with Poland's conservative authorities. This report by Gabriel Stiele.
On a sunny Saturday afternoon, the annual Equality Parade, which is now the official name of the Warsaw Gay Pride Parade, took off from outside the Polish Parliament building. This year, the parade was proclaimed legal after a decision from the Supreme Court, and a planned counter-rally was called off. Some 3,000 participants took part in the march, which took the route along the Marszałkowska Street, past the Palace of Culture, and further on to the Theatre Square. Most spectators were positive or curious. Some voices from participants.
I think it's very good and it's very needed, because in our country we have a lot of xenophobes. All of us, we must come and be together. I'm not a gay, so but I think that everybody are the same.
I'm very happy that I'm here. It's so much fun, and I didn't expect that so many people will come. Nobody is hurt, and now we're showing people that we're normal people that can have fun and can be friendly. That's wonderful. I met so many wonderful people, so happy, so friendly.
Also, politicians from Germany, Sweden, France, Italy, the Netherlands and Britain took part in the parade. Emine Buskurt is a member of the European Parliament from the Netherlands, and Michael Cashman is one from the United Kingdom. Both represent Social Democrat Labour parties.
I think it's very cheerful. We are walking here and also the people who are looking here on the side are warm and welcoming. Yeah, yeah. So I was not expecting that. So I hope it will go on like this, because this is a very important day, a day of celebration for the Polish people, because it's about equal rights, and equal rights are for everybody. That's what the European Union is about.
I think the march has been a wonderful, positive surprise, and I think the reception has been very good so far. I've always believed that the hate speak that we've heard from some of the senior Polish politicians was not representative of the great Polish majority. So here we have the march, people are still living, nobody's fallen out of the sky, so it goes to show that diversity can be celebrated.
The parade was preceded by a debate in the Parliament building, arranged by the Democratic Left Alliance. Participating European politicians and gay rights activists all declare their solidarity with the Polish LGBT movement in times when high-ranking Polish politicians have made hateful statements against it. This year, no big counter-rally was held, only small groups were posted along the way. The police were able to stop some attempted attacks, and 14 people from extreme right-wing parties were detained. The leader of the League of Polish Families, Roman Giertych, who earlier urged both sides not to take to the streets, spoke against the Warsaw city authorities for letting the Pride Parade be held.
Gabriel Stieler reporting. And if you'd like to hear any of these stories again, go to our website. It's www.incentraleurope.com. You'll find text and audio of all these stories. Insight Central Europe is a co-production from Radio Prague, Radio Slovakia International, Radio Budapest, Radio Slovenia International, and Radio Polonia. Music from a special event in Budapest to mark World Refugee Day on June 20th. The United Nations High Commission for Refugees, UNHCR, organized the open-air concert in a Budapest square, and the Dutch Rabassa group from Cape Verde played world music to an audience that included refugees. Georgi Jacobi has more.
At present, there are approximately 500 to 2,000 refugees based in Hungary's three main refugee centers in the towns of Debrecen, Békéscsaba and Bicske. Estimates are rough. It's difficult to monitor the exact number of refugees based in Hungary once they leave the state-run centers. But has Hungary attracted more refugees since she joined the European Union just over 2 years ago? I ask Public Information Officer of the UN Refugee Agency in Budapest, Andrea Sobolic.
No, absolutely not. The number of refugees is steadily decreasing in the past few years, both globally and in Europe and in Hungary. And we believe that the decrease is due to the fact that the largest conflict zones of the world are actually becoming more and more peaceful. The peacekeeping operations in Afghanistan and in a lot of African countries are successful, and the largest refugee-producing countries are actually not producing more refugees nowadays, but they have started to receive their nationals back, like Afghanistan or Liberia, which saw large numbers of returning refugees last year. These refugees refugee returns can be felt in Europe as well. Just to give you an example, in Central Europe in 2005, there were 44% less refugees than in 2004. On the European Union level, this decrease is equal to 15%.
But does lesser refugees mean an improvement of care for them?
While in the 1990s, Hungary had a sudden influx of Yugoslav refugees of various ethnic backgrounds, and while at the end of the 90s, Hungary saw a large influx from Kosovo, today, as there aren't any more such crises near the borders of Hungary, they are accommodated in much more spacious rooms and much better hygienic conditions. It is also important to mention that Hungary has received significant support from the European Union to develop its refugee reception centers.
Due to her geographic location, Hungary used to be a transit country in the past. But how about the present and the future?
Certainly, Hungary has traditionally been on the crossroads of both migrants and refugees. So a lot of people who were heading towards Western Europe were transiting through Hungary. But as Hungary was approaching its accession to the EU invested large sums of money to support the Hungarian border guards to decrease illegal migration into Hungary and through Hungary. So the number of illegal migrants and the number of human smuggling networks and human trafficking networks has decreased. We are keeping very close contacts with the Hungarian border guards and the Hungarian government to make sure that refugees are not returned from the borders of Hungary and that they are allowed to enter and that their refugee asylum applications are handled in an appropriate manner.
A reassuring statement by the Public Information Officer of the UN Refugee Agency in Budapest, Andrea Sobolic. For Inside Central Europe, this is Gyuri Jakubi in Budapest.
A curious international dispute was finally resolved this week in a rather unusual fashion. The Austrian owner of a hotel located right on the Austria-Czech border resorted to trimming the roof of his hotel, which was hanging over into the Czech Republic. Rob Cameron reports.
It all started in 2004 when Dietmar Hehenberger, owner of a luxury hotel in the village of Gugelwald on the Czech-Austrian border, decided to add another wing. The new wing, or so he thought, would be located 200 metres from the border. When the extension was finished, however, Czech map makers informed him that the Austrian map used to determine the hotel's location was wrong. The roof of the hotel was actually hanging over Czech territory and therefore violating international law. For the next 2 years, Mr. Hehenberger fought a legal battle with both the Austrian and Czech authorities. On Tuesday, unable to bear any more paperwork, he gave up. He sent workers up onto the roof with chainsaws and they trimmed off 30 centimetres, bringing the hotel back into Austrian territory. The incident has embarrassed senior officials on both sides of the border. Jan Zahradník is the governor of South Bohemia.
I was at the hotel about 18 months ago when I and the governor of Upper Austria, Josef Pöringer, organized a meeting there with EU Commissioner Danita Hübner. Mr. Hehenberger showed me the roof and explained the problem. I took it as something of a curiosity, a tourist attraction even. I never thought it would end like this, that after 2 years of traipsing from one office to the next, the owner would take the matter into his own hands and cut off a piece of his building rather than deal with the authorities any longer. I think that's just terrible.
Mr. Hehenberger told reporters the alterations had cost him about €5,000, but it was the principle, not the money, which was at stake. It was ridiculous, he said, to argue about 30 centimetres when the whole of Europe was uniting. But rather than risk being forced to demolish the entire wing, he came up with this most unusual solution. In August, the latest team of local officials will arrive in Gugelwald to check the situation. Mr. Hehenberger must be hoping this visit to his hotel will be their last.
Rob Cameron reporting from Radio Prague on the curious case of the cross-border hotel. Summer is festival season across Central Europe, with the warm days and nights bringing people out to hear music and experience performances and art. In Slovenia, it's time for the traditional Ljubljana Summer Festival. Ksenia Zamadzija-Matul has more.
The beginnings of the Ljubljana Summer Festival date back to the 1950s, and since then it has featured a number of cultural, folklore and other events. Throughout the years, the Summer Festival in the Slovenian capital has offered a variety of performances of domestic and foreign musicians and artists such as Dubravka Tomšić, Grace Bumbry, Jose Carreras, Celia Cruz and many others, as well as the world's greatest symphony orchestras and opera houses. In the last few years, up to 70 events of different genres have taken place at the Summer Festival. This year, the program offers again high-level performances, and it started with a highlight. The New York Philharmonic Orchestra opened the festival, and it was a huge success. The tickets for this concert were already sold out a month before the concert itself, and Darko Brlek, the artistic and managing director of the festival, mentioned a few other highlights we can expect in the next 2 months.
The Architecture of Silence, the new dance project of Edvard Kluk, will have its premiere during the festival. Edvard Kluk is well known to our public, and there are also the Slovenian Music Days, the Vienna State Ballet, Elton John's musical Aida, and many other artists who will perform. Altogether, there will be 109 performances until the end of August.
In his performance, the Architecture of Silence, dancer and choreographer Edvard Kluk of the Ballet of the Slovene National Theatre in Maribor combines two musical works, Requiem by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart and Requiem for My Friend by the modern Polish composer Zbigniew Preisner. This season's program will also include open-air cinema at the Ljubljana Castle, several exhibitions and other events. So, if you're looking for cultural highlights in Slovenia this summer, there will be plenty of opportunities to enjoy live concerts and performances. For Inside Central Europe, this is Ksenia Samardzija-Matul.
Thanks, Ksenia. And that's it for another Insight Central Europe. It's a co-production by Radio Budapest, Radio Slovakia International, Radio Prague, Radio Polonia, and Radio Slovenia International. I'm Kerry Skyring. The producer is Dieter Asiedu. Join us and the rest of the team next week.